Golic and Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Hope your Wednesday's off to a good start. We, as always, are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests will join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here. The Pugs have made an appearance.
They have made an appearance, as has my dad. So we mentioned he's back in town. Today was an off day for him, but he's in the house. He'll probably bop on later because, as we said off the top of the show's ending. You all saw the announcement yesterday.
Wait a minute. What?
Yeah, I know. I hate to break it to you right now, Trey, during the show.
All right.
Yeah, no. So things are in motion there. We talked about that. Dad will, I think, come down and say his piece at some point here, but he did just get back and went out fishing over the weekend, and Dad is, as you've all seen, anyone that's watched on ESPN News or ESPN2, grown a hell of a quarantine beard during all of this, has adopted a very Moses-like look, which was intentional, and picked himself up a hell of a tan out fishing over this last weekend. We do not have a drop of Greek blood within us, but my father looks like a Greek man
right now. He looks like a Greek fisherman.
He does. It really is remarkable.
Or Zeus.
Yes, I can say there's elements of all of that in there, but he is getting closer and closer day by day to the Ten Commandments Moses-like look that he has so coveted for so long.
Okay, so as sports are beginning to come back, and we've seen sports come back, we've noticed that for the most part they are without fans. And you and I have had some interesting conversations about the idea of fans not being there and how it may affect certain athletes.
Yeah, so it's been the case study in all of this, and I talked about this even leading up to the competitive eating contest this weekend, the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest, of what the reaction for the athletes, kind of the sports science version of this, is how we all respond to crowds in this situation. But even more so when you look at everyone that's normally around athletes. Everyone has these great entourages at certain times. People have so many handlers. You have so many people that you're trying to worry about over the course of your athletics timeline here, that at times it can maybe take away from what's going on. It can make it more difficult. We see this all the time for people that are trying to go out there and perform at the high level. And so you almost wonder if at this point in time, because you've removed everything else in the name of safety, if it's actually made it even easier to hone in on what you've got to do athletically in all this.
And you know, there have been some practical applications of this. We've seen scores on the PGA Tour be dramatically lower. Like, for example, these four events that have come back, the winning score over the last 4 weeks has been an average of 19.75 under par. Apples to apples, the last year when these four events were played, it was about 16.75 under par. And for the events leading up to before the stop of play on the PGA Tour, the average winning score was 18 under par, and now it's almost two strokes better, 19.75 under par. So is there a real psychological advantage to the players by not having the pressure of fans out there?
And how does that differ sport to sport? Because for something that requires as much focus in golf, and we see is already one that kind of shuns noise, how does that differ from a sport like football, team sports that are getting ready to come back? It's all fascinating.
So for more on that part of it, we're delighted to be joined now by someone who does this for a living. He's a sports psychologist and has worked with, among athletes, many golfers among this, Dr. Bob Rotella. Dr. Rotella, thanks for being with us. We're just trying to figure out if there's a practical application, or is it just happenstance, specifically when it comes to the golf scores, where we see these scores just, these players absolutely tearing up the courses without the fans in attendance. Just what would your initial reaction be to that question?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, can you go to the Pebble Beach Pro-Am every year? The golfers, they love quiet, and they're used to quiet. If you bring in the NFL players, they don't know how to play when it's quiet. They're used to noise. So the sports are different. But I think where it really gets interesting is, in my experience with let's just take NFL for a moment, what you don't see is what's going on inside a player's head. And a lot of the great football players, they create their own reality. In other words, they make up this make-believe world inside their head when the game starts. And it probably starts when they're young kids. I mean, when they're practicing, a lot of them pretend they're in a game. And when they're in the game, they pretend they're in practice. If you think back when you're a little kid growing up in your hometown, you first started imagining playing for your high school, even when you were just playing backyard football. I remember Barry Sanders talking about it, that he one of the greatest running backs ever, and he said during his entire career, in his mind, he was still playing flag football. And he went on and talked about how everybody had quick feet, in triple hips when they were playing flag football. And most guys, when they get to the higher levels, start tightening their muscles for contact and ruin all their quickness, and which is just him taking himself into this reality that he created. I've worked with other guys in the NFL who told me they're really good at Madden football, and they'd look at me and they say, you know, when I'm in an NFL game, in my mind, I pretend I'm inside the computer playing Madden football, and when I'm playing Madden football on my computer, I pretend I'm actually in an NFL game. A lot of players will talk about taking themselves to a happy place, which is wherever their favorite field is, wherever they played their best, that's where they take themselves. Now, when you talk about how it'll help players or hurt players, I think it's got a good chance of helping like any NFL rookies. I think it'll probably be beneficial to quarterbacks. It's going to be quiet for play calling. I've worked with a lot of kickers. It's probably going to be useful and helpful to kickers. On the other hand, maybe veteran players are going to really miss the noise and are going to have to really do a great job with their pregame music and how psyched they're getting in the locker room to get themselves motivated and really turned on and where they need to be for their game. And, you know, as you know, I mean, NFL players learn, you know, based on position, how jacked up do I need to get before the game starts? And other players need to get kind of down and relaxed for the game. And I think everyone's going to have to figure out how to do it without the fans. But I think the important thing is we're talking about really competitive people, and their competitive instincts are going to take over once the game starts, whether there are crowds there or not, because let's face it, in reality, they know that there are going to be millions of people watching them on television. And so, I mean, that's going to play a pretty big role. But I think the other factor is going to be, how's it going to affect momentum? You know, when a team really starts going great on their home field, you know, the crowd gets really loud and jacked up, and it probably really is helpful for the home team. It's probably going to really eliminate home field advantages. It's probably going to have some impact on momentum. And, you know, I think the other thing that's interesting, you know, having played both basketball and football and worked with basketball and football, players, I think we'll see that basketball players will say, well, the fans are much closer to the court. I don't have a helmet on, so I'm very recognizable on and off the court. Whereas, you know, football players and baseball players in general, no matter, unless they're really, really famous from commercials and post-game interviews, a lot of people wouldn't recognize them. But the basketball players feel a much closer connection to the fans, and the fans know who they are. But I mean, I think ultimately everyone's going to get lost in the game once the game starts and learn how to play without a crowd.
Talking to Dr. Bob Rotella, sports psychologist with us here on Golic and Wingo, Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo. And the crowd aspect of it is interesting, but to me also, I think one of the parts just anecdotally that so many guys relied on and so many athletes fall back on is the nature of routine and how important it is. How much do you think the disruption of the routine, whether it's been in players' off seasons or even as it pertains to how they have to go back now with all the precautions taken around COVID-19, might actually affect performance or their readiness to perform?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. And I think where it first started showing up is the routine of having a workout coach or trainer there with you every day, you know, yelling in your ear as you're lifting weights and working out and pushing you and prodding you and pulling you, as well as having lots of teammates and all of a sudden having to work out on your own. I think we're already finding out, boy, who is self-motivated and who is going to have the discipline to get in the facility and work out on their own versus which players got in really bad, lazy habits when they didn't have someone kind of there pushing them every day to do it. I think that's where it began. I think now it's, well, what kind of things are going to change in the locker room or on the field? And, you know, if you depended on the crowd to get yourself jacked up, you're going to have to find another way of doing it. But I don't know. There's a lot of things like that are just going to be interesting. But players are very good at figuring it out quickly. So, I mean, even though we really like routine because it keeps you calm, at this point, it may be helpful that they have to develop a new and little different routine to get themselves ready to play, given that there aren't going to be fans. And for most of these guys and gals, I mean, it's been years since they've not played in front of fans. So, you know, it'll be very fascinating to watch.
Dr. Bob Rotella with us, renowned sports psychologist. Obviously, golf is such a game played inside your head because everybody can stand on the driving range, especially as a professional level, and hit every shot they need, and then you go out there under the pressure of the course. So specifically when it relates to golf, because you've worked with so many golfers, the idea of there aren't fans there that aren't maybe or maybe not saying things and just it being so much more quiet, do you think it has more of an effect in golf than in other sports?
You know, not really. I mean, I think golfers would rather have a crowd there. They'd rather have people celebrating when they hit a great shot than even make noises when they hit a bad shot. I mean, what's funny in golf is that the fans are now betting on whether you're going to get it up and down. It's almost like they're not even as concerned with the outcome of the tournament as they are hole by hole. I mean, people are out there betting on, are they going to miss this putt or make this putt? And the noise kind of is a reaction to their bets. I mean, golfers, you know, they want it quiet when they're actually swinging the club or putting. There's no doubt about that. But, man, they like having a live audience. I mean, I think in every sport, I mean, to some degree, people who are great athletes, they're entertainers, but they like showing off. I mean, they put a lot of time and energy into what they do, and they like having an audience there to show off for. I mean, it can certainly enhance performance. But I think, like you mentioned a moment ago, I mean, take away the crowds, and you have a contest and a trophy and prize money, and winning is still valued. I mean, they're going to be competitive, and you know, they're going to play. I mean, let's face it. They go play on Tuesday against their buddies for $100, and they're, like, into it. So, I mean, I think people are going to compete, and they're going to perform.
But it's just a fascinating thing that we were sort of kicking around. I wanted to get your thoughts on it. So, Dr. Rotella, we appreciate your time this morning. Thank you, as always.
Hey, great talking to you. Enjoy.
You bet. Thanks.
Yeah, what he talked about there with framing is so interesting. Yeah. Sports psychology in general, how people get themselves ready, motivated, and where that comes from to play, and how you do that when all of a sudden the stressors around it change. And we've seen for a lot of athletes, the motivation to go play when you've got all these things to worry about outside, in your personal life, in the larger world as it is, it changed some of those motivators in a way that's super interesting.
Right, so we'll see how that continues to go forward as sports to continue to come back and see if that becomes a factor one way or the other, because playing in silence, especially in a sport like baseball or soccer or football, where you're used to that crowd din and basketball at all times, it's going to be interesting.
When we were at the, and this is very relevant to that, when we were at the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest this weekend, me and Jason Fitz as part of the broadcast there was going to be silent in the room, and we were going to play on ESPN music kind of underneath the contest just for the broadcast, because if not, you were going to hear so much of the chewing in a way that could have been off-putting. We talked to the eaters, and they actually wanted the music pumped into the room for that same reason. They're used to that din. And when we talked to all of them, they weren't sure how they were going to respond, hearing the sounds from the other eaters and the way that might affect them in all of this, and actually wanted the music in there to replicate some semblance of normalcy like that.
Yeah, Bundesliga and other European soccer leagues were piping in crowd noise just to make it feel a little more like it was a normal atmosphere for a game. So we'll see what happens there. Meanwhile, we talked about this a lot at the top of the show. Eagles wideout DeSean Jackson has issued an apology for doing the thing that should be the lowest hurdle to cross. If at some point you say to yourself, hey, Hitler said something, I should post that on any social media platform, your initial and obvious reaction is, no, don't do that thing. Yet, of course, that is what he did, and even though it wasn't an actual Hitler quote, it doesn't make it any less offensive or wrong in any way, shape, or form, because your brain actually said, I believe this to be something that Hitler said, and this is something that everybody needs to hear. Obviously, that was a terrible decision.
And I think that's like we can universally agree on that. Like, this is so
easy. You would think that would be the easy one for all of us.
But like, this is also so easy for all of us to look at and universally condemn. And it brings up a lot of questions about what does DeSean Jackson actually believe? His poorly phrased and poorly thought out apology doesn't really help us along in that in any way, shape, or form. And so we're led to still rightly look at DeSean Jackson, condemn what's happened here, understand that it is bigoted, it is, you know, discriminatory on the basis of religion in all the ways that we know are awful, and we can look at him and rightly question, like, what do you think of Jewish people? What are the beliefs that you hold, and how did they bring you to the point where posting the things that you did felt like something you were comfortable with for other people to see? Like, plenty of people are bigoted inside their own homes, and that's an issue they've got to deal with, but he felt comfortable enough to bring this one to social media in a way that is jarring and inconceivable to most people. And this was his apology that he then followed up with on social media that a lot of people heard of and were not thrilled with.
I've been getting a lot of backlash and feedback from an Instagram post that I put on my my Instagram story. I just want to extend an apology on the behalf of me and what I stand for, because I'm one that's fair, and I never want to put any race down or any people down. And, my post was definitely not intended for anybody of any race to feel any type of way, especially the Jewish community. When I posted what I posted, I definitely didn't mean it to the extent that you guys took it. And I just wanted to let you guys know that I'm very apologetic, and I just want you guys to understand that it never was intended to put any race down or any religion down. I post things on my story all the time, and, I just probably shouldn't have never posted anything that Hitler did, because Hitler was a bad person, and I know that. And, I was just trying to uplift, African-Americans and slavery and, just enlighten my people. So on behalf of myself, I just want to let you guys know I apologize. I didn't intend, any harm or any hatred towards any people. I'm for one. I'm for love. And I extend it every day. People that know me know I have no hatred in my heart, and I never try to, put another religion down to uplift my religion or my race. So, from the bottom of my heart, I just want you guys to understand that. And it's coming from me, my feelings. And, I just hopefully everybody respects my platform, my opinion, to try to just enlighten my people and just let everybody know that it's no hatred.
Look, there are so many things that were so wrong with that apology. Respect my opinions. So that's basically saying you have an opinion about what you put out there. I don't put any religion or people down. You can't, in a functional way, say, I'm putting something up that was attributed, I believe, to Hitler, and then follow that up with, I don't want to put down any religion. Those two things are polar opposites. Those two things cannot coexist. So the question I have, first and foremost in all this, what does DeSean Jackson actually know before he posted what he thought was a Hitler quote about who the historical person of Adolf Hitler actually was? Because those things are incongruous. They are not together in any way, shape, or form.
I was going to say, because a lot of people have brought up the fact that it was a quote that was not, it was improperly attributed.
Which is irrelevant.
It is irrelevant towards the culpability of DeSean Jackson. Like, yes. He still looked at the person associated with that quote and said, I am going to put this up there. There is a larger discussion about the misinformation in graphics like that that pollute the internet, that can be influential to young people that see those, and anyone who's got an impressionable mind in ways that are dangerous, and those need to also be cast out. But that doesn't absolve DeSean Jackson from anything in this situation. And I thought L. Duncan, one of our great Sports Center hosts, who was on Around the Horn yesterday, had maybe the one of the better responses I had heard to this.
DeSean Jackson posted a quote that was wrongly attributed to Adolf Hitler, and the Eagles essentially described it as a teachable moment. And I think that couldn't be more tone deaf, because there would be deserved outrage if a white player posted a quote on Instagram attributed to David Duke. There is no hierarchy when it comes to bigotry. Racism, sexism, anti-Semitism, they are all despicable behaviors. They are all disgusting, and as such should all be treated in the same vein.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. But it brings an interesting point, right? Did you see as many people outraged on Twitter about what DeSean said from inside the NFL family as you did, say, when Drew Brees completely bungled what the protest was.
No, and I think some of that, we should all be outraged on this.
Yes.
And we're having Jeff Schwartz on in a little bit,
right.
A guy who played in the NFL for a number of years and is Jewish, his brother Mitchell, who still plays for the Kansas City Chiefs. And the perspective of what that's like as a group that walks around and for the most part looks more like the majority, even though there are instances like this where bigotry still comes at that community in all of this. Because with the other responses, what we've always talked about is when it's come to what Drew Brees said, attacks on the Black Lives Matter, you're dealing with a league that's like 75% black, so it's more personal to them in that way. It's not to say that it is better, worse, or lesser. What El said there is absolutely true. But on some level, when you talk about the immediate emotional response, when the attack is directed right at you, we see that the response can often be stronger. And that's not to excuse anyone. If pressed upon this, there should be outrage in this.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, a threat to freedom for anyone is a threat to freedom for everyone. Is some, you know, my own very poorly worded version.
It's a version of what
of a sentiment that a lot of people purport, which is that if you have people being discriminated against anywhere, no one is truly free in this process. So yes, it should be there. But from a response level, I think you can understand if the league was 75% Jewish, this would be a response and a level of outrage like which we've seen. It doesn't mean people are right in not being outraged. It just means when it comes to the immediacy of the reaction, I'm understanding and looking at that because we've noted throughout this entire time part of the reason. Hell, when we're talking about what's going on in the WNBA right now and the comments made by a minority owner for the Atlanta Dream, when you're dealing with a league, what have we said? When you're dealing with a league that's about 80% African-American women, going in and saying this particular thing there is even more inflammatory, right?
Correct.
So that's the way I don't, that's no way. And I'm not saying I excuse the lack of response, but I look at it and say, based on how personal it is because of the particular issue and the particular group of people and how prevalent they are within the NFL, you can look at it and say, all right, at the very least, initially, I can sort of understand the response.
Yeah, and again, we'll have much more on this from Jeff Schwartz. He'll join us in just about an hour from now. Golic & Wingo is brought to you by 303 Touchless Sealant for the ultimate protection and shine in no time. But coming up next, another controversy brewing inside the NFC East about the Washington Redskins and doing an internal review about changing their name. We'll talk to a former player about that. Plus, he'll get us ready to be healthy in space, which is an underrated part of this tease that we need to talk about. Well, that's where we are in our nation's capital. We've already talked about what's going on in Philadelphia with Deshaun Jackson and the NFC East. And, of course, the issue about the Washington football team is they're taking an internal review to change the name. The NFL has said they're behind this. FedEx, who is the sponsor of FedEx Field, where they currently play, has been encouraging this. Nike has taken some of the Washington stuff off their website. They're listing 31 teams and not the Washington Redskins at this point. So we had Brian Mitchell on earlier this week to talk about it. For more on the potential name change, we're delighted to be joined by someone else who spent a lot of years playing for the Washington Redskins, and that is former linebacker Ken Harvey. Ken, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate your time. As someone who played a lot of years in Washington, where are you in the process of the team finally, and team owner Dan Snyder finally, at least going through an internal review to talk about changing the name?
Well, hey, thank you guys for having me on. I will say this. There are a lot of stations came at me. Everybody wanted to know, what's your thoughts? What's your thoughts on it? And I kind of stayed away from it because, you know, kind of like it's beyond me. It's not really my problem anymore. I don't play. But then some people brought it to mind and said, you know what? What if the team was called, you know, the Washington Darkskins or something like that? It's offensive to someone. And at this time right now, I think that it's probably the perfect time to make a change because, you know, more people, you know, dealing with the current situation, dealing with the environment, changes can happen. And if you look at all throughout the league, you know, teams have made changes in their names. Teams have moved from, you know, Oakland to Los Angeles to Vegas. You know, there are changes that are made. And so it's more about the quality of the team as opposed to the name. People will get used to the name if the team produces and do what they're supposed to.
In that regard, as you mentioned, it was something you didn't discuss much before. As a player, were you aware, and did you guys as players feel a lot of that conversation or any of that questioning about the name while you were in uniform?
You know, I mean, so it's a different time. When I played, it was you know, you represented, you know, it was a warrior, right? The Washington Redskins, you know, you played against the Cowboys. You know, that's what you kind of saw it as. It was not derogatory. It was just more of two warriors fighting. It was a battle. And so you never saw it as anything negative. But just because you never saw it as that way doesn't mean it isn't that way to someone or somewhere. And given the current environment, you know, things do change. I mean, opinions change. Reality is brought to light with some things. And so I think back in the day, no. I mean, I think every player that played tried to represent what they would assume a warrior would be like, a fierce warrior who would fight and do whatever he could to protect his territory. And that's the way we played, and that's the way we felt with the emblem on our helmet.
Ken Harvey with us, former Washington linebacker in the Washington Redskins Ring of Fame. And obviously you finished your career right before Daniel Snyder bought the team. But Daniel Snyder has always said the word never when thinking about the idea of changing the name. What do you think is the impetus for him now to see it? Is it the social change we're seeing, or the fact, if we're being honest about it, you know, there might be a lot of financial pressure on him? We talked about FedEx and Nike and some of the minority owners in the team, including Fred Smith, and who is the Fred Smith of FedEx, have said they're thinking about liquidating their assets, and he's trying to get a new stadium built in downtown D.C. So what do you think might be the motivation here?
Well, I mean, I think obviously financial was probably one of the reasons you didn't change. You know, it's a cost. With a losing team, if you would have changed the name before and the team was losing and you didn't have fans in the beginning, the few fans that had stayed would have probably left because you've changed the name. So, you know, financially, it didn't make any sense to change the name. Right now, if financially the opportunity's there, whereas, you know, people may say, I'm a take away from you and we won't be a part of it. Financially, you could say, well, we're going to change the team's name because this is a new beginning. We got a new coach. We got a new head coach. We got a new attitude. We got a new lineup of players. We're going to try to change the whole attitude and do it. And so, you know, I think this may be an opportunity to come out on the bright side of things. The hard thing is, you know, because of the season and because of what's going on with the virus, you don't know what type of season it's going to have. But I do think that they have the quality players that can really make a run for something this year.
Talking to Ken Harvey with us again, former NFL linebacker, played in Washington for a number of years. And Ken, in getting ready for this and switching gears slightly, I am obligated by journalistic integrity to ask you this question. We were going through and checking out your Wikipedia page, and it listed on here that you currently work as a fitness trainer for space tourists. And I'm wondering if that is true. And if that's still the case.
Don't believe everything you read on Wikipedia. And no one told you that. It's I you know what I did? I did some stuff. Me and another guy, we were doing some things on space tourism, and we were talking about you know, the future in space. And so you know, I think someone put because of fitness and training that would be something I would do. But you know, everything's turned out for the good because I've actually written a movie script about a sports game in space, and so I've been pitching that, and you know, who knows, there may be some reality to that. So keep it up there and make it a reality.
Well, I'm glad we know about this now. Is it too, all right, so first off, please keep us updated on this, because in all seriousness, if you are looking for extras in this movie, we have three very willing bodies on this end. So,
listen, nobody has looked at my body and said more. That's an extra. So I'm 100% in on that.
Well, you know, in space you float. So the body mass, you know, it doesn't matter. But, yeah, I always joke with people, you know, if I like it, you'll have a longer part in the movie. And if I don't, you may get killed in the first scene. So watch how you talk
listen.
To me.
First of all, I love that flex, and secondly, I finally found a sport that I can play. Your body doesn't matter. So in. You know what, I'm in, Ken.
Ken, and what you brought up there, Ken, my father has always wanted to be an extra in a movie and be killed off in that movie. So if you're looking for someone that you need that with, Mike Golic Sr. is your man. So just, we ask you to keep that in mind, and we appreciate you getting us up to speed on this. We will try our best to have this Wikipedia page corrected to properly reflect the current situation.
You know, keep it the way it is so that it can become a reality. I will start training people, and, you know, it may be a new job for me, so who knows?
There we go. Perfect. Hell yeah, Ken.
So what we've got in the NFL training camps, there's always camp bodies. And now we will be space bodies.
Space bodies.
Ken, we appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
You bet.
Golic and Wingo is brought to you by DraftKings, America's top-rated daily fantasy app. And my God, we might get to go to space in a movie.
We have stumbled upon a wonderful thing.
That went better than I ever could have expected. Like, we sat around all yesterday talking about this notion of space training that was just listed in his Wikipedia page. And now to find out that it actually has legs in the form of a movie is the best possible outcome.
And we're looking for the best possible outcome. Coming up next, LeBron or Mahomes? Speaking of Mahomes, how much hardware will he win? We'll do either, neither, or both next.
This is yours.
You can get with this, or you can get with that.
Either, neither.
There's levels to this, bro.
Or both.
Say it again.
You can get with this, or you can get with that.
This is either, neither, or both with Golic and Wingo.
What it is.
Every time.
What it do, Trey? Golic and Wingo reminding you the 30 for 30 podcast is back with season 8. Heavy Metals Inside the Karoli Olympics Gymnastics Empire is a groundbreaking 7-part podcast series that takes listeners on a deep dive into the lives and influence of Bella and Marta Karoli.
You've never heard of Bella Karoli before?
No.
Wow. These kids today, man.
I'm giving you one
name in gymnastics. Bella Karoli, I think, would be up there.
I'm glad you said the name because I was trying to move through that as fast as possible. Bella and Marta Karoli, the most successful controversial coaches in U.S. gymnastics history. To listen to the trailer, subscribe now for the 30 for 30 feed on Apple Podcasts. The whole season drops next Tuesday, July 14th on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast. My apologies for butchering the name and the sincerity of what is surely a great addition to a great podcast series because of my own incompetence and lack of knowledge.
All is good, brother. We got no problems here.
There we go. Well, we got either, neither, or both is what we got here on Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio and ESPN2. So, Trey, trusting at this point now as we stare down the end of all this that you finally figured out either, neither, or both?
Yeah, I'm going to shove it.
God.
Go ahead, start.
Either, neither, or both, Trey, will crown a champion this year, the MLB or MLS or the NBA.
Together.
Listen, I am still shook off the 30 for 30 read. It's not my best self today, bud. Not my best self today.
That's the laugh I needed. Thank
How about
you.
This? Either, neither, or both will crown a champion this year. The NBA, Major League Soccer.
I'm going to go with both, and here's why. Because I was texting with our good friend Taylor Twellman this morning in the spate of positive tests from a couple of teams, and I said, I'm a little worried. And Taylor said, no, I think we're good. The two teams that needed to be gone or gone because of this and are going to be gone because of this. So the rest of it should go off, he thinks, relatively without a hitch. And I believe that no team is more prepared for this or the more league is more prepared than the NBA. So I'm going both.
I'll go both. I am hopeful, but cautiously. I think going off without a hitch, while I trust Taylor's guidance on everything related to soccer, I think just in the overall realm of sports, there are going to be a lot of hitches, and it's just going to be everyone's willingness and ability to kind of manage them as best they can.
Plus, Taylor's going to get me on a really good golf course in an hour, and I needed to promote him in any way, shape, or form I can.
That's a fair point, and a smart point, and one we appreciate. Either, neither, or both will not be with their franchises going forward. Kelly Loeffler, DeSean Jackson.
Well, it's interesting because one is going to have a commissioner oust an owner, and that seems to be a little more difficult and onerous.
I can say, not worth noting, not the majority owner in this situation, and not one who has been involved in the day-to-day operations of the organization since October of 2019.
And DeSean Jackson has to answer to the people in the organization and the outrage that will be coming from the next couple of days and how he responds to that. I'm going to say either, and I think it's going to be Kelly Loeffler.
Huh. Interesting. I was actually going to go either and go DeSean Jackson in this one just because we've seen in the past with this organization a player go through something not the same but similar to this in what Riley Cooper went through and ultimately still found his way back onto the team for the football reasons that are unfortunately a part of these decisions. And we know
sliding scale
skew the way that morality is always levied in this. Doesn't mean the situation is any less wrong or shouldn't be punished in some way, and I think will be punished in some way. But with Kelly Loeffler, I think what we're seeing is this idea that if she's already an ancillary part of the picture, getting her all the way out would be something that everyone during this time especially might be motivated to do.
Right, so that's, yeah, so there we go.
Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio. Either, neither, or both will be worth the next 10-year quarterback contract extension. Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson.
This is interesting for me because I don't think most players want a 10-year extension in the NFL. I mean, one of the reasons Dak Prescott still doesn't have a long-term deal is he wants a 4-year deal to kick the can again, which, by the way, understand, Patrick Mahomes is going to kick the can again in about 5 years. So, yes, is it a 10-year or 12-year extension? Technically, he ain't making it to that before they have to redo the deal and probably get more upfront money. So it really isn't that. I'm going to say neither because I don't think either Lamar or Deshaun would want a 10-year contract.
I would go either, and I would go Lamar just because of, well, just because of the position with the organization. Because like you mentioned, part of this is the understanding of the Chiefs and Mahomes were such a match. Him and Andy Reid were so cohesive. We have clearly seen with Deshaun Watson in general, the Texans organization, the situation there seems tenuous at best with the departures there and as ugly as they've been publicly versus in Baltimore. They have wrapped their arms around Lamar Jackson. They have mortgaged everything in supporting his style of play, the offense that they want around him. And it seems like a lot more stable organization up top in all the ways that might lead you to a spot where that's possible.
Yeah, if the answer is worth based on the organization, I would agree with you. I'm just taking it that neither one of them would actually want a 10-year extension at this point.
Either, neither, or both is the greatest American athlete right now. Patrick Mahomes, LeBron James.
Well, this is very difficult because obviously LeBron James is a freak and still at a very old age. I mean, at a very advanced age, doing very, very well for the sport. There's no question about that. I'm not going to say anything against Patrick Mahomes. I mean, my God, the kid's 24. He's an MVP, a Super Bowl MVP, and a Super Bowl champion, and he just set the record. So to me, the greatest American athlete right now is playing the most popular sport, and that would be Hall of Famer Patrick Mahomes.
See, I still think it's LeBron James at this point.
And I can't argue against you. I can't.
It's understandable. I think he's proved just the staying power, the reach overall in this, and the continued. We saw renewed dominance in the sport this year. I think I'm going to go with LeBron in this one. Either, neither, or both, Patrick Mahomes will win at least 3 Super Bowls, MVPs.
I think for this to happen, they have to win one this year because they're set up to do the first thing since the Patriots of 38 and 39 repeat as champions. They have everything in place, including Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 20 of 22 starters coming back. It's predicated on if they win one this year, I will go either and say 3 Super Bowls.
Oh, I'm going either in MVPs. I think that's easier for him to control because the team doesn't have to win the Super Bowl every year for him to be the best player in the sport. He already didn't win the Super Bowl the year that he was the MVP of the league. So I'll go either, and I'll say the easiest bet right now would be to bet on his singular greatness in all of this.
Yeah,
so.
I think that's fair.
Either, neither, or both. Super Bowl or bust. Chiefs, Bucks.
Both.
Really? You think the Bucks are Super Bowl or bust this year?
Well, you don't sign Tom Brady to a 2-year contract at 43 to not win a Super Bowl. I mean, that's it. They're all in.
That success for the Bucs still could look different. If they don't win the Super Bowl, I don't think any of us would be surprised. I think them making the playoffs would be the one here.
Right, but Tommy cares about one thing, another ring, because 6 isn't enough for him. We're coming back. Stay with us.